Chapter 4. Salis.
Wait, wait, wait!
Salis shouted into his suit radio. The base of the railgun was 10 meters across, built in a rough hexagon and massing more than a small ship. At his words, a half-dozen construction thrusters along the great beast's side fired off, jetting ejection mass into the void. The calibration meter on Salis's mech cycled down to zero. The hairbreadth movement of the great beast stopped. They floated together. Inhumanly large weapon, softly glowing alien station, and Salis in his spider-like safety yellow construction mech.
Okay, Koyo?
Jakulski, their tech supervisor, asked in his ear.
Reading drift,
Salis said, playing his ranging lasers over the railgun and the socket mount it was meant to lock into. It had been hard work, fitting the alien station with the three wide belts of ceramic, carbon silicate lace, and steel. Now it looked like a vast blue ball with rubber bands around it, each at right angles to the other two. And where the lines crossed, railgun turrets squatted. It had turned out it was impossible to drill into the alien station. Welding didn't work because the surface wouldn't melt. Wrapping the whole damn thing up had been the only viable alternative for attaching things to it.
Que maske?
Jakulski asked.
Shift 1:10 relative Z, -8 seconds relative Y.
Sabi,
Jakulski said. The construction thrusters along the length of the railgun stuttered, impulse and counterimpulse. All around them, the gates dotted the sky with only a little over 1,300 bright spots, barren and empty and threateningly regular. Medina Station itself was the only other object, and it was far enough away that Salis could have covered the whole structure, drum, drive, and command, with his outstretched thumb. The slow zone, they still called it. Even though the weird limit on speed had been lifted, the name was the name, and it carried a sense of strangeness and doom with it. Most of his work was inside Medina. Heading out into the vacuum was a rare thing, and now he was here, he didn't like it much. He kept turning away from the job to look out into the black. It had been almost the end of his first week on the job before he realized he was looking for the Milky Way, and that he kept looking because it wasn't there.
Bis bien?
Jakulski asked.
Moment,
Salis said, checking the ranging lasers again. He glanced up the length of the great barrel while the mech struggled again to get a fix on the thing's skin and the socket. The few railguns he'd seen before had been made from titanium and ceramic. These new materials Duarte was sending through the Laconia Gate were bleeding edge, though. It wasn't only the iridescence of the carbon silicate lace plating. The power cores that ran the guns and the frictionless ammunition feeds that supplied them were strange. The designs were elegant, sure, but they were just magnetic rails powered by fusion cores, same as any ship's. And they did what they needed to do. But there was something off about the way they came together. A sense of being not manufactured so much as tested for. A kind of awkwardness and beauty that made Salis think of plants more than machines. It wasn't only the new materials that went into them. Ever since the Ring Gate lifted itself off Venus, there had been bits of new one thing and another. It was the scale of it. And maybe something else. The ranging lasers reported back.
Bien, Salis said. Bring the bastard home.
Jakulski didn't reply, but the thrusters fired. Salis kept painting the socket and railgun alike, making manual reading after manual reading. It was the sort of thing he usually left to the mech's system, but the new material sometimes caused the laser to throw false errors, and it was better to be certain. The station had been still as stone in the years since the gates had opened. Didn't mean ramming a great damned machine into it wouldn't provoke a response.
It took the better part of a shift to bring the massive thing in, but eventually it locked into place. The turret settled, absorbed what little momentum was left in it. The socket closed around it, leaving Sallis with the uncomfortable image of gigantic lips closing very slowly around a huge straw. "Pulling back," Sallis said. "Clara Tessio?"
"Moment,"
Sallis said, pushing off from the station. He floated out into the emptiness to where Roberts and Vanderkost waited, strapped into their own mechs. The mech's attitude thruster brought him to a relative stop at their side and turned him back to look at their work. On the group channel, Roberts grunted.
"Visakar Bakhtar," she said.
It was true enough. With the guns strapped at the top and bottom of all three axes, the station did look a little like something seen through a microscope. A macrovirus, maybe. Or a minimalist streptococcus.
"In place," Sallis said. "Clara test."
"Three," Jakulski said. "Two, one." The railgun beneath them shifted in its socket like something waking from sleep. For a moment, it seemed to drift like a reed caught in a current of ether. Then it snapped into place, jittering from one position to the next too quickly for Sallis's eyes to see the motion between, faster than the twitch of an insect's leg. It cycled through, taking aim on each of the gates in its field of vision. With the layout they had, at least two of the guns would be able to sight every gate, and most gates fell in the arc of three. Sallis had seen pictures of old fortifications overlooking the sea back on Earth. They'd never made sense to him before. Too flat to apply to his own experience, but this was the same thing. The high guns that would protect Medina Station from invading ships forever. He felt some emotion stirring in his chest, and it could have been pride or dread.
"Bien,"
Jakulski said. He sounded almost surprised, like he'd expected the gun to rip itself loose and spin out into the nothing sky.
"Pull back for live fire."
"Pulling back us,"
Vanderkost said.
"Don't put around through us, Sasa."
"I do when you let me know, eh?"
Jakulski laughed. Easy for him. Not like he was out here. And then, not like the guns couldn't turn Medina to chaff, too. Sallis and the others pulled back 50 clicks, flipped and decelerated for another 50. The darkness was unnerving. Back on the other side of the gate, it was never this dark. There was always the sun and the stars.
"Stopped and stable," Robert said. "Hast du due painted friendly?"
"Do. It shoots you, that'll mean something's wrong. Setting target," Jakulski said, and Sallis upped the magnification on his mech.
There, in false color readout, was the alien station. This far out, he could see three of the six guns.
"Sensor arrays, bis bien. Firing in three, two, one."
A puff of vapor spat out the tip of the gun, charged gas making a brief extension to the barrel and putting a little more speed into the round. Sallis's mech shuddered, the magnetic spill from the rails affecting his systems even this far out. He didn't see the rounds the railgun fired. In the time it took for the harsh feedback tick to go from his radio to his ear, the tungsten slug was already through the target gate. Or out into the weird non-space between them. In the false color display, a ripple passed through the alien station, like what he'd seen in a sphere of floating water when one part of it got touched. The ripple died out before it even circled the station once.
"Laque vist?"
Jakulski asked.
"Nothing,"
Sallis said.
"It looks fine. Tu?"
"Station glow, only thing,"
Jakulski said. In all of their tests, the only reaction the station ever had to being pushed by the railgun shots was a shower of photons.
"Nothing else?"
"Nope."
"Drift?"
"No drift."
It was what they wanted to see. The railguns were big enough, powerful enough, that even keel-mounted on a ship, firing them would have been difficult.
Mounted on turrets like they were, they should have been as much thruster as weapon, driving themselves away from whatever they were shooting at fast enough that they'd be hard to catch. Except the station. Whatever the aliens did to shrug off equal and opposite reactions, it only generated enough energy to throw a little light, and it didn't seem to bring any kind of countermeasures against them. Still, Salis wasn't exactly looking forward to heading back and checking the sockets and bases.
"You hear Castle talk?" Vanderkost said. "About why it don't move when we push it?"
"No," said Roberts.
"Said it does, but the ring space moves with it, so we can't see it happening."
"Castle's crazy."
"CI?"
"Sending us back in?" Salis asked into his radio.
"Moment," Jakulski said, and then, "Bien, cleared you. Keep those Augen wide, anything not right."
Not right, meaning cracks in the housings, meaning leakage of the fluid tanks, meaning failures in the reactors or the ammunition feeds. Meaning the eyes of an ancient god looking at them. Or something worse.
"Savvy," Salis said, checking his thrusters. "Going in."
The three mech drivers shifted and launched themselves back toward the station. Medina floated to his right. The still drive cone. The turning drum. Salis looked out past it like he was searching for a familiar face. But the stars still weren't there. The internal drum section of Medina Station had a straight-line sun that burned at the center of rotation from the command center all the way down to the engineering decks. The full-spectrum light from it came down on the curved farmland and the wide, bent lake that had once been meant to carry a city of Mormon faithful to the stars. Salis sat in an open-air bar with Vanderkost and Roberts, drinking beer and eating white kibble, that tasted of cheese powder and mushroom. Behind and before him, the landscape curved up to lose itself in the sun's bright line. To his left and right, the full length of the drum spinning at about the G of Luna. The gentle breeze that breathed against the back of his neck came from spinward, same as it ever did. When he'd been a boy, Salis had seen the big room caverns on Iapetus. He'd walked under the four skies of Ceres. The drum at Medina was the nearest thing he could imagine to sitting on Earth, as it had been before the rocks came down. Unregulated atmosphere above him, and the thin crust and mantle holding him above the core of molten stone. No matter how many times he came here, it felt exotic.
"Flyers up again,"
Robert said, squinting up into the light. Salis looked up. There, almost silhouetted by the brightness, five bodies floated in the air, arms and legs outstretched. They seemed to be flying from behind Salis, curving up ahead like the fields of soybean and maize, but the truth was, they were the bodies at rest. About 5 months before, some adolescent idiot had figured out how to lay down a temporary track that could accelerate people anti-spinward to match the drum's rotation and let them launch themselves up weightless in the air. So long as no one got too near the artificial sun or failed to match the drum's acceleration before they came back down, it was supposed to be good fun. Two streaks of vapor reached out from the engineering decks toward them, and Salis pointed toward them.
"Security got them, yeah?"
Vanderkost shook his shaggy gray head.
"Ton muertas."
"Young and stupid. But it's what the Romans said, fihi me fihi," Robert said.
Her voice had more sympathy, but she was also nearer the age of the illegal flyers.
"You born stone and sober, okay?"
"Born with respect," Vanderkost said.
"My shit only kills me."
Roberts's shrug was a surrender. On ships, real ships, back on the right side of the gates, keeping the environment safe was always the first thing. Double-check what had already been double-checked. Clean what was already cleaned. Playing fast and loose was a quick way to die, and your family and crew along with you. There was something about the big stations, Ceres, Hygieia, Ganymede, and now Medina, that gave kids license to be dumb, reckless. Stability, Salis thought. Having a room as massive as the drum did something to people's heads. He felt it too. It seemed too big to break. Didn't matter that nothing was really that big. Anything could get broken. Earth got broken. Acting like risks weren't risks put all of them in danger. Even so, there was part of him that was sorry to see the security crew lock down the flyers. Kids being kids. There should be a place for that somewhere. Martians had that. Earthers had that. It was only the Belters who'd spent too many generations dying for their first fuck-up to let their kids play sometimes. He squinted into the brightness. The security and the flyers were heading down to the surface now, foggy trails of their suit thrusters making wide, slow spirals centered on the bright line of sun as they came down.
"Too bad," he said.
Vanderkost grunted.
"You hear about the gang showers in F-section?" Robert said. "Blocked up again."
"Alles designed Konful G," Vanderkost said. "Same thing with the farms. Fields aren't draining like they should. Spin the drum up the way Los Mormons meant it'd work."
Roberts laughed.
"It would. We wouldn't. All smashed flat, us."
"Better to change it,"
Vanderkost said around a bite of kibble.
"We do enough, it'll work," Salas said. "Ship with this much redundancy? If we can't make it right, we don't deserve it."
He drank the last of his beer and stood, lifting a hand to ask if either of his crewmates wanted another. Vanderkost did. Roberts didn't. Salas stepped across the dirt to the bar. That was part of it, he decided. The plants and the false sun and the breeze that smelled of leaves and rot and fresh growth. Medina's drum was the only place he'd ever lived where he could walk on soil. Not just dirt and dust, those were everywhere, but soil. Salas didn't know why that was different, but it was. The man at the bar swapped out Salas's bulb for a fresh and a second besides for Vanderkost. When he got back to their table, the conversation had moved on from the flyers to the colonies. Wasn't that big a shift? From people taking stupid risks to people taking stupid risks.
"Aldo says there was another bunch of threats coming out of the Jerusalem gate," Robert said.
"We send their reactor core, or they come get it."
"Surprise them if they do," Vanderkost said, taking the fresh bulb from Salas.
"Guns up and it's past time for Alisla."
"Maybe," Robert said, then coughed, "maybe we should give it to them, yeah?" Vanderkost scowled.
"4-4?
"They need, and we have, is all," Robert said. Vanderkost made a dismissive wave of his hand. "Who gives a shit what they need?" But something in Robert's voice caught Salas's attention, like she'd said more than she'd said. He met her dark eyes and lifted his chin as a question. The word she was trying to say pushed her head forward like a nod.
"Can help if we want. Might as well, see, no? No reason, no, since we're not what we were anymore, us," she said.
Vanderkost scowled, but Roberts went on.
"We did it. Us. Today."
"Que dan que us," Vanderkost said.
His voice was rough, but if Roberts heard it, she didn't stop. Her eyes glittered like she was about to cry. When she spoke, it was like water coming out a snapped pipe. Her voice gushed and pulsed, and gushed again.
"Always, it's been when we find place. Ceres or Pallas or the big Lagranges never got built. Mia Tia talked about making a station for all Belters, Alice. Capital city at a void. It's this. Belters built it. Belters live in it. Belters gave it power. Because of guns we put in, it's ours forever. We made this place home today. Not just our home, ours. All of ours. It's our homeland now. Because of us three. Tears dripped down her cheeks, slow in the sixth G. Joy lit her from inside like a fire, and it left Sullis embarrassed. Seeing Roberts like this was like walking in on someone pissing, intimate and wrong. But when he looked away, the drum spread out around them. The plants, the soil, the land above him squinting down at him like a sky. He'd been on Medina for 15 months, longer than he'd ever been on a station in his life. He'd come because Marco Henaros and the Free Navy needed people here. He hadn't thought about what it meant, except he'd known in his gut he was more OPA than the OPA, and that was what the Free Navy meant. Now, maybe, he caught a glimpse of what was behind that. Not a war forever. A place. Homeland, he said, speaking carefully, like the word was made from glass and could cut him if he said it too hard. Because the railguns. Because something's ours, Robert said, and because now they can't take it away. Sullis felt something in his chest, and he let his mind poke at it. Pride, he decided. It was pride. He tried a smile and turned it to Roberts, who was grinning back. She was right. This was the place. Their place. Whatever else happened, they'd have Medina. Vandercost shrugged, took a long pull from his bulb, and belched. Bese for us, he said. But here's for that. They ever do take it away. We sure as shit never get it back again.